We are talking today with Steve Verrett with Plains Cotton Growers. Steve, let's talk about some of the things happening right now within our business here in the Southern Plains. Your footprint, of course, goes all across this part of the world. A lot of that area, Steve, is very dry, and I know that is a worry. How concerned are you right now?
Well, I think folks are getting really nervous, Ron. I was famous for saying, 6 weeks ago, 8 weeks ago, we still had plenty of time. Things can change. We knew it was dry, but, we still had a chance to and some time to get the moisture we need to get a crop off to a good start. We're not ruined yet. We haven't lost this crop yet, but certainly the time period is drawing nigh for needing rain to get a crop off to a good start. A lot of folks will begin planting in the month of May. Here we are in May. We won't be too worried about getting things planted till we run up against crop insurance deadlines, the first of which will be May 31 in the northern part of the Texas Panhandle. And then we shift to a June 5th date and then June 10th. And then we'll get off the cap to the east and the south. It'll go to a June 20th planting date. But yes, everybody's pretty nervous right now, Ron.
I guess what the drought monitor sure suggests that we've got high levels of drought. You get definitely from southwestern Oklahoma right on into much of the Texas Panhandle and across the South Plains.
Yes, when you look at the drought map, certainly the worst area, the most significant or severe drought is our western territories along the New Mexico border on down into eastern New Mexico. We actually have some areas that the situation is drier than it was in 2011. Now, when you compare the drought maps to 2011 for the same period of time, certainly the whole state of Texas was in a drought in 2011. That's not the case here in 2021, but we most definitely have some areas that are as bad or worse than they were in 2011. Fortunately for some folks, and when you get basically east of Lubbock, off the Cap Rock, the drought conditions are not bad. They're not great, but they're not bad compared to some of our areas. And, a good inch, 2 inches of rain, and they'd be off to the races. We have some areas where the drought is much more significant. It's going to take at least a two-rain event in order to get the soil conditions where they need to have proper emergence of cotton. Now, with all that being said, this last week, we actually got a little bit of rain in some of those areas. Some areas to the south of Lubbock got as much as 2 inches of rain, 1 to 2 inches of rain. That didn't cover a large area, but it did cover portions of Dawson County and into Borden County, even over into Gaines County, maybe not, but about an inch of rain, maybe a little bit in Yoakum County. But we still have some significantly dry areas that are going to need some rain very soon.
Steve, let's talk about some of these things that are going on within the industry right now that the industry's having to kind of pay attention to, both in our nation's capital and elsewhere. But a couple of the big buzzwords that have really been pushed hard by our new administration, the Biden administration, and really even before that, climate change, sustainability. It seems like if you don't pay attention to those, you may get run over. What's the game plan to make sure the cotton industry is positioned correctly?
Well, we've been saying to our folks for quite some time that, that we're not looking for any increases in Title I funding or crop insurance funding over the next several years. And as you said, this is not necessarily something that hasn't been coming all along, but it's certainly receiving much more attention under the Biden administration, and that's on just what you said about climate change. And so, you know, the best chance that we have for some increasing dollars into the USDA or the what we would consider the farm baseline is going to be in the conservation title. And it's just absolutely critical, Ron, that we make sure that when programs are being developed, that they take into consideration the differences in regions of the United States. You know, here in the southwest region of the United States, rainfall is not as plentiful as it is when you move further east or further into the Midwest. And so we just got to make sure that whatever programs or whatever ideas are thrown out there on this climate smart agriculture, we keep hearing a lot of that term being thrown around, that farmers in all parts of the country, while it may look different, are going to be able to participate in whatever is being done in order to move us to that more environmentally sustainable region that we need to be in. You know, our definition of sustainability here would include certainly environmental sustainability, but also has to have the component of economic sustainability. And we believe there's ways to do that, but we just have to keep the focus on the fact that it's not the same everywhere in the United States. And we got to make sure that the southwestern part of the United States is not left out of that when it comes to writing rules and developing programs that have to do with climate change, carbon sequestration, whatever it may be.
Obviously, that economic sustainability is all about being viable going into the future. I know that you've obviously Plains Cotton's got growers that are both dry land as well as irrigated producers. And on the irrigated side, I know that the continued worries are the future of the Ogallala.
That's right. And, you know, I'm still active in our farming operation, not on a day-to-day. I hope to be so more, you know, when my retirement comes around at the end of June. But my son is there taking care of everything and farming our operation. And we know that the future is not in irrigated agriculture. That doesn't mean that we're going to run out of water to drink in this part of the world, but from a viability standpoint of being able to use it for irrigation, it's just becoming less every year because of the cost and the availability. So what we have to figure out in all of this while we have a bit of time is a non-irrigated or a dry land system that can be both viable, certainly first and foremost, economically, but at the same time, provide the sustainability on the environmental side. And we believe that there's ways to do that. It's there's some transition going on as we speak in that regard, whether it's a variability or a use of a lot of different topics or methods, whether it's from no-till to cover crops to whatever it may be that can fit in your operation. We have to figure that out going forward and how it's going to work in a dry land situation. It's not as easy. You know, research has not been as much on dry land agriculture because it's tough to do research on dry land agriculture because you can never depend on the weather allowing you the ability to do those multi-year projects that you need to do, but we have to have them. And we're seeing more research focused in that area. But indeed, we have to start looking at how a dry land agriculture system is going to work in our world as we transition away from irrigation.
Again, you know, coming back around to that whole sustainability conversation, I know that cotton industry, National Cotton Council and others have really stepped up on this Cotton Trust Protocol effort. Your thoughts on the importance of that for our cotton producers?
Well, it's important because, you know, the brands and retailers and our customers are the ones that are requiring this or demanding this, and it's because of their customers. And whether we totally agree or disagree on the issue, you know, we have to do what we need to do to maintain our customer base and have an adequate market for the crops we grow, whether it's for cotton or whatever it is. And, you know, and I applaud the cotton industry for stepping forward and coming up with their own system, a verifiable system that documents basically what cotton farmers are doing all along. That doesn't mean that, you know, necessarily that all you got to do is just fill out the paperwork and check the boxes and you don't have to critically look at your own operation and see if there's not some room for improvement. But for the most part, what we are doing, because of the laws and regulations that we operate under in the United States today, it's not a big step to get to where we can verify what we're doing is being sustainable. There's always room for improvement, and that's the things we have to look at. But this is going to get tied into then what we talked about earlier on this climate change and what we can do on sequestering carbon, what we can do to implement these climate smart agriculture tools. You know, the if we're going to have a system that basically verifies or shores up or proves to our customers and the rest of the world that what we are doing is sustainable and is good for the environment and good for us economically as well, I'd much rather it be a system that's put together in place by our own industry. And so that's what the Cotton Council and the cotton industry has attempted to do with coming up with the Cotton Trust Protocol. And certainly we've been encouraging our members and producers here to look at this and participate and to give it a chance, because it's going to be critical going forward of being able to show to our customers and our brands and retailers that we are truly growing cotton in a sustainable and environmentally sustainable way.
Thanks, Steve. Steve Verrett, Chief Executive Officer of Plains Cotton Growers. Steve will be stepping down at the end of June after a 24-year career with Plains Cotton Growers. On the Oklahoma Farm Report, I'm Ron Hayes.